Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends.
I ended up getting married. Had two little girls. When my daughters got really, really sick, she contracted spinal meningitis. She had kidney failure. She had all these things. And they told me that she wasn't going to make it. Within a very short time frame, my husband at the time, I found out he was having an affair. And so within a matter of like a month, my husband moves in with her, drains our bank accounts. We just bought a new house. And like, here I am. Oh my God, what am I going to do? I was like, I have got to keep these kids in this house. Like my whole goal was keep them here, keep them safe. What am I going to do? So I just sold 69 houses my first year in real estate. I think I made $760,000 in commission that year. Like, imagine going from six years as a teacher, making 60 grand after 6 years to do $760,000. You know, if you have a big enough reason for anything, you'll do anything. That's what it was.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Travis Makes Friends. Today, I am making friends with Krista Mayshore. Krista, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Travis.
Of course. So before we get started, I'm going to force you to drink this energy shot.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I already took one, so don't get mad at me for not
taking
one.
Okay, it's Ketone IQ. I'm on a fast, and I'm a little hungry, and I saw him take it, and I was like, what is that? And he's had great things to say about it. So I was like, can I have one?
Yeah.
Sort of asked for one.
Yeah. So we were talking about this before, because we both have health journeys of our own, right? So what I found out when I was doing a lot of intermittent fasting was one of the reasons to do them is that if you do not have any more glycogen stores left, then your body switches from burning glycogen, which is what your body turns like carbs and sugar into as an energy source. It switches from burning glycogen to burning fat, and then it turns that fat into ketones. And ketones is an alternative energy source for your body to go off of. So this is just exogenous ketones, which helps you maintain metabolic flexibility with like switching your metabolism between burning fat and burning glycogen for energy, which means that if you get into that like zone two cardio where you burn a lot of fat, you'll actually be burning fat instead of just like exhausting yourself and burning
glycogen
that doesn't exist or burning through the glycogen stores that are in your muscle. And it helps suppress your appetite and all that good stuff. So I like
it
a lot.
So he schooled me on this.
He said, they're great.
I'm like, what time do I take it? He's like, I fast, I eat from 11 to 7. So he's like, right around. You fast longer.
I think around the same. I usually start around like 12 or 1 and go till about 8.
About 8, yeah. I think I need to do a little bit later because I tend to eat a little bit later. Okay, ready?
Go for it.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. It kind of tastes like, what's that stuff you take when you're sick?
Cough medicine.
Cough medicine.
So funny. My wife said the same thing. I tend to agree. It is not.
I can't say it tastes good, but
it is not the best tasting.
I didn't want to lie, but
no,
I'll
you're
tell
good.
You how I feel in like half an hour.
I'm not going to lie about it either because they do not. They do not taste very good.
Okay,
But they are very effective, and especially before podcasts and stuff, I take them. Yeah. I find it also boosts like mental clarity. It acts almost like a nootropic. You can take Alpha Brain or Magic Mind is another product I take a lot. They're nootropics and they help, you know, just with mental clarity. And I find that there's more information that I can access that exists in my brain.
Okay, when so I take might get a little crazy today. Like, what's that pill that guy takes? Keanu Reeves.
Limitless.
So
it's kind of acts as that as well. So the benefits far outweigh. And that's why I like it as a shot. Because I've seen some that are like drinks and I'm like, no, thank you. I don't need to prolong that. I'll just take it as a shot.
And, you know, go buy this, right? Because don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They sponsor the show. Yeah. Ketone IQ. And I'm having the founder on here in a couple of weeks whenever I get out to LA next. So good product. A lot of like athletes take it and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we'll see what you think of it. And it's really helpful for me when I fast just because it's the appetite suppressant.
Yeah. I know, because you get a little hungry, but...
Oh, totally, yeah. Okay, well, Krista, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go back in time, because most people listening to this or watching this that know who you are, know you as this big personality, real estate expert trainer. You've won I don't know how many ClickFunnels, two Comma Club awards, and now you two Comma Club X awards, which is 10 million plus in sales and all that stuff. You've obviously been extremely successful in that portion of your career. And then you were an actual real estate agent for a couple decades before that. Let's go back in time. I wouldn't say that. Let's go back in time. Talk to me about 7-year-old Krista Mayshore. Where were you at 7 years old? Set the scene for us and talk to us about family life at that age.
Man, he goes pretty deep quick. Like, that was like right in.
As quick as we can.
Okay, so I like to tell people, I kind of had sort of two childhoods, if that makes sense, I would say. So I was raised in a very religious Jehovah's Witness, which I love Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm not one, but I really respect the religion and their morals and values. Those stuck with me. So I was raised in a very loving household with a very loving mother and father, two brothers. I was the middle daughter, and then also a very abusive mother at the same time.
This is the same mother though.
Same mother.
Okay.
Yeah. My parents are still married.
Two sides.
Yeah. She's amazing. She's one of my best friends now, and she has been for a long time, but, the abuse was pretty severe. So when I turned 13, I started running away from home and I haven't lived at home since I was 13.
What made you, like, when was the first time that you ran away from home?
13, like right around 13. So I just started running away, and then.
Because something specific or just because.
It was just like, I got tired of the abuse. Yeah. And so, you know, I found myself living in like RVs or living in abandoned buildings, living in cars.
When you're that age, did you recognize how different it was, or were you just trying to escape the pain?
I don't know. I remember, you know, so many happy moments growing up, and then also so many like sad ones, you know, just always not feeling like I was loved by my mom or always wanting her approval. And quite frankly, I grew up being scared all the time. If that makes, I would just, you know, like, you know, that anxiety feeling you get. Have you ever been in trouble when you were a kid and you wake up and you're like you remember you're in trouble? It was like that feeling all the time, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I always like to preface it, like, my mom was also an amazing person, and she dealt with her own abuse, which is not my story to share.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing, like, whenever I talk about this kind of stuff on the show too, it's never from a place of like vilifying the other person as much as it is like trying to unfold like why you did the things that you did. Because there's pros and cons to how everybody was raised.
Everybody's
parenting situations were different, and there's, you know, besides the extreme situations, there's probably pros that everybody can take away, and there's probably a lot of cons that everybody can take away. And no matter how good of a parent you are, there will still be a ton of cons that your kid is going to take away, and they're going to be in therapy when they're 25 talking about all the stuff that you've done. Yeah, exactly. It's just like part of being a parent, right?
Yeah.
But obviously it informed a lot of the decisions that you were making at that time. Did it affect schooling or like academics?
No, you know, it was crazy because I was, I had a learning disability when I was younger.
Okay.
Got put in special education because I couldn't read. They realized when I was in second grade, so I got put in special education. Yeah, I wet the bed until I was like 11, like just a lot of emotional stuff going on, you know?
Yeah.
And when I got out of a special education class, I was like a straight A student. And so when I started running away, I was a straight A student. So the police were like, this doesn't make sense. Your daughter is not the typical runaway.
Like, profile.
She's a straight A student. And so no one kind of really knew what was going on or understood it. And then, so.
Where in the world were you? Like, what's?
I was in Concord, California. So
Concord, okay.
I was in the Bay Area.
Yeah, like East Bay?
Yeah, East Bay is where I live now. Concord, California, and ended up finally breaking the law. I ended up stealing all the clothes and the money, lunch money from my eighth grade, when the girls were at PE. So I stole their clothes because we didn't have any. And so we were on the run. We knew that they were at peace. We snuck into the school, stole the clothes.
You say we? Who's we?
One of my best friends. She's now like the right hand man of my company.
Oh,
woman
no
of my company. We've been friends since we were 7, and I'm 52.
Nice, that's awesome.
So then I got put in juvenile hall. Spent a few 3.5 months
because
there. Because of that. Yeah.
Really? That's crazy. So they put you in juvie for a one-time offense of just stealing clothes.
Yeah, it was different back then, you know. So they put me in juvie for 3.5 months.
Wow.
And then I got sent back home and things were still bad. So then I got sent to I got sent to a group home first. I went to a group home for troubled girls for a year in Cottonwood.
Okay.
Called Hidden Hills Group Home for Girls. It was like this, you got dropped off every day in this big green bus in high school, like labeled, you suck and you're a screw up.
So you got dropped off every day. So like Monday, you didn't stay there.
You stayed there. So meaning I went to the group home, and then the group home, they would drive us to school And while they took us to school in this big, huge green bus.
Gotcha.
So it was just like more.
It was like a, it was, yeah, a display of like everybody at school.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good for a young teenage girl's mental health for sure.
It was like one more like, oh, I suck. And
right. You know, oh, just, totally.
Yeah.
It's like a billboard telling everybody like a billboard. You're a screw up. Yeah.
And it
Which
was.
Only informs your identity and makes you be more of a screw up for most of the, that's the crazy thing about some of those group homes and stuff like
yeah.
that is that they do so much worse for people than they do good for people.
Yeah. It was so like, it was just hard on the self-esteem and then you self-worth and the value. And then everyone else made you feel even worse because they wouldn't. Anyways.
So you said that was before juvie or after?
That was after. So juvenile hall, 3.5 months, directly to a group home for a year.
How did you feel the difference was between juvenile hall and
it was less scarier. I mean, yeah, you know.
It was easier at juvie?
It was.
Oh, okay.
It was actually, it's crazy because juvie was kind of fun after I got used to being there. After I saw somebody get the crap kicked out of him. I'll never forget this big, huge girl with red hair came in and she grabbed this girl's hair and slammed her against the porcelain. Toilet, teeth are flying everywhere, blood's everywhere. I was 13 going, oh my God, I'm going to die in this place. But then I made friends with that person after she got out of isolation and we became good friends. And they actually made us become roommates. So
The bully?
The bully. So it's like, if you're ever in juvie or you're ever in jail,
make friends with the big
with
one.
The bad guy. That's what I did. Yeah. And it worked out well. So the group home was actually, it was hard because, you know, you're in this place, you're living there, you know, you're there for a year. So I ended up being a counselor there, like a student counselor. I was the youngest student counselor there. And then I went back home after a year. And then it was still, things weren't better. So they ended up sending me to a foster home.
Did you look at those things as like, now looking back, do you look at like juvie, your time in the group home and stuff as things that were actually helpful to you back then? Or were they like now looking back at them, like that didn't make any sense to send me to those types of places? Like it was objectively worse.
No, I mean, you know, like back then they didn't know what to do with people. It was so different than now, you know, and, you know, nobody talked about abuse. You didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell anyone. Nobody knew, you know, my parents, they didn't want me to go like, you know, and, you know, I was like, I can't stay here, but nobody knew I was leaving. They thought I just wanted to go party. You know, like I was raised Jehovah's Witness. So they thought, here I am. She just wants to, you know, rebel and all these things.
Of course, yeah.
But it was very helpful. I mean, I learned really quickly, like I knew I was a good kid, you know, and kind of just in a great environment, but also not one.
Sure.
Like I said.
Super confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. And very, very low self-esteem, low self-worth. Just, I mean, I've battled with that for years. It's taken me a long time to really, you know, like I would say past 10 years, very confident, but no, I think it helped me. I mean, I really believe that, you know, I know this sounds crazy, but I believe that God put me here, God, the universe, the higher power, whatever you want to call it, but to really help people. And I think part of my past was able to help me be really relatable and realize like, oh my gosh, she came from kind of some humble beginnings. If she can, you know, do what she's done, that I can do anything.
Yeah.
So, I think it happened for a reason. I always tell my mom, like she feels so bad. And I'm like, it happened for a reason. It's all good. You know,
You can either pull purpose from your past or you can,
you
know, make excuses because of your past.
Yeah. And, don't get me wrong. You know what? I didn't love leaving my family. I mean, even though I chose to leave it, I was missed them and I was lonely and I was sad, but
again, confusing.
Yes. Confusing. Right?
Like
yeah.
The place
yeah.
you feel safe / the place you feel not safe.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Gotta be confusing.
Yeah.
So you said you went back home. So you gotta be around 15, 16 at this point.
I was 14. Okay. Like 14 and a half.
I was going to say, young enough for them to put you in foster care.
Yeah, yeah. I went to foster care at 14.
Okay.
I turned 15 in the foster home.
Okay.
And I was hard. I missed my family. Like, I remember crying at the foster home the first couple months. But then I made some great friends. And
how are your foster parents?
They were nice, very nice. Yeah. But when I turned 18, I had to leave because the money wasn't coming in. It wasn't at fault to them. It was just like, you know, so I mean, I've had to really figure it out. You know, like I was like at the time my mom didn't talk to me for a couple of years because I was like not in the church and my dad did, but I had to kind of like, you know, like from day one, the time I was left, I mean, financially everything fell on me.
Yeah.
You know, from everything.
What'd you do?
I just figured it out.
No, college was never on the horizon.
College was. So okay. I actually went to college. I ended up working.
So you went to college out of the foster home?
Yep. Went to college out of foster home, got a loan. I got student loans. I got a couple like grants, like very, very small. Worked full time. I'd work, you know, all day long or work late at night so I could go to school. And just, it was like.
Props to you for keeping your grades
grounded it
during that time.
Yeah.
To like get into to focus on anything when you have that kind of stuff going on at home had to be extremely difficult.
It wasn't. I mean, I just, I kind of threw myself into it. Kind of like now, like now I love to work, you know, so.
Yeah. It was something kind of to focus on.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So getting to college, what would you go to school for?
Industrial psychology. So I got an industrial psychology degree and then I got a master's in education, became a teacher.
So you're working the whole time?
Yeah. So the whole time.
Yeah.
Working the entire time. I worked at Costco. I would go to
just jobs, whatever job you could get.
No, I was lucky. I worked at when I was in Fresno City, I worked at a video store.
Oh, you were in Fresno?
Yeah. I went to Fresno for, okay. Then I got F's and then I got sent home because I did not do good my first year in college.
Okay.
So I went back home and went to a junior college and I worked like Costco from 10 to 6 every day and went to school from 6:30 to 10.
Wow.
Yeah. So
Costco's a good job though.
Costco's a great job. Yeah. Most people stay there forever because they're making quote unquote good money. And I go there still and they're the same people from like 35 years ago are still there. It's crazy.
It's kind of a really great case scenario for a lot of people.
Oh, like, it is.
You're going to a junior college and you're trying to like get a job making 30 grand a year when you're done and you already have a job at Costco and it's like, well, they have, you know, stock options.
Yeah, and they're paying, you know, and back then it was like a capped at, I think, $17 an hour, which was like a lot.
Sure. Okay. First of all, I didn't know you went to Fresno. So I lived in Fresno for three years. Yeah. So
I bet it's really different. When I was there, was nothing there, you know. Bulldogs,
oh, really?
Go Bulldogs.
Yeah. Well, there was a, there's a place right across from the Bulldogs campus that was like it's like the one thing I miss about being in Fresno. It's called Doghouse Grill. And they make these delicious tri-tip sandwiches that there's always a line there. It was like one of the highlights of living there.
Yeah, they didn't have that so one. I just couldn't afford it. Like I was like living on Top Ramen, you know.
That's
like
fair.
Really, I couldn't go. If there was one, I didn't know about it because I was eating Top Ramen.
Okay.
Or sneaking into the cafeteria using my friend's card.
There you go. Yeah, even cheaper.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get your degree. And you get your master's degree, working the whole time. What do you do right after you're done with college?
Ended up getting a job that I hated and then realizing...
In the field that you studied?
I got my degree in something different, but I got this, like, I was like a repo person where they put, person calling people. And that when I was like, oh, I hate this. Then I met my ex-husband at the time and I was like, I want to be a teacher. So I went, got my credential and became a teacher. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lots of schooling then.
Lots of schooling. I have master's. Yeah. I got the master's after the credentials.
Did you enjoy all that?
I loved it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
You just like learning?
I'm a freak. Yeah. I'm a freak. Yeah. My hobby is learning. I'm so boring.
Oh, that makes you interesting in my opinion.
It's like, oh God.
Okay. So odd jobs. Not really sure how your degree fits into all of this. Did you feel like at this point that you were able to reconnect with your family? Did that
yes,
come
we were.
Time?
So when I got out of the couple of years after getting out of the group home, and, you know, finishing college, I came and basically confronted my mom and said, hey, like, I want you to tell dad what happened because he thinks I just left. And the whole family, once I left, like the family kind of fell apart. My mom sort of had a nervous breakdown all these memories came back for her and it just ruined the family. But it was kind of like Krista ruined the family. So I wanted my dad to know because we were so close. We still are.
That's wild. Dad didn't know any of it.
He didn't know any of it. Yeah. Wow. So she told him. And then she went to counseling with me and helped me heal and helped me kind of recover as much as she could. And so it was it's a great ending, you know. And then from then, been super close ever since.
So this is like mid-20s?
Yeah, 23. Kinda. I met my first husband at 23. My mom had the engagement party for me, got married, you know, and things seemed good.
We've been
very close ever since. And I'd say it was probably around 22, 23 is when we got close, 23.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's great. At what point did you kind of like separate yourself from the religious aspects
13.
Of spirituality?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
so you were done with it before
I was done with
you
it at 13.
Gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just because you were experiencing all these things that were contradictory to what you were being told?
Yes, a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We have another podcast called Figuring It Out, which was me, my wife, and my producer, Eric, who runs a show on religious abuse.
Oh, wow.
And so Figuring It Out, we talk a lot about, you know, religion and coming out of religion and where you
oh my gosh
end up
I almost feel guilty like it's like even talking about it because it's you know you're it's so in down like embedded into who you are. I'm not gonna get it in
it's like
podcast,
it's like computer code
like I couldn't even go into a church for like still sometimes like, I can't go into a church it's not Jehovah's Witness church like I feel like I'm
totally
getting killed you
totally
get it it's like you know
and I won't press further on it
yes
if you want to come on a different show we'll talk about it in depth at some point
I feel guilty but, that's like you know it might be a little She's like, oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, well, anything. I mean, yeah, the guilt is kind of one of the core pillars
of
religion.
Yes.
And when I say religion, I'm talking religion, not spirituality, not relationship
and I'm very,
with God,
like,
or the universe, whatever you have.
Very close to God. And I, you know, I talked to him this morning, you know, on the way here and, you know, on the plane and all these things. But,
Okay. So do you...
People like all this stuff. Oh, really? They actually listen to this kind of stuff.
It makes me very
curious. They probably already deleted me. delete this person. So boring. Her life is messed up.
No, not at all. It's super interesting to me. I'm curious. I'm curious how much that stuff, in your opinion, made you good or not good or completely neutral when you started getting into real estate. Meaning, like, I find that there's a correlation between religious upbringings and like communication, sales, marketing. Like I find that there's a lot of people that if you're kind of in this boat or were raised this way, you tend to have this kind of natural proclivity to being successful at this other thing. Or yeah, you go the complete opposite direction.
So let me preface this. Okay. So when I ended up getting married, had two little girls. And one of my daughters got really, really sick. She contracted spinal meningitis. She had kidney failure. She had all these things. And they told me that she wasn't going to make it. She's perfect now. Let's just say that. So I ended up leaving my full-time teaching job and going to be a stay-at-home mom. And I thought, okay, I'll get my license and I'll just play real estate. I'll sell a couple houses a year to make what I was making as a teacher. Mm. And right within a very short time frame, my husband at the time, I found that he was having an affair. And so within a matter of like a month, I get this phone call. I see your husband. He's golfing, AKA not. And there's this new girlfriend coming to my house, driving my car, picking up my daughters for Thanksgiving and taking them away for the weekend. My husband moves in with her, drains our bank accounts. We just bought a new house. And like, here I am. Oh my God. What am I going to do? Like,
and
just left my
25.
Career. I was like 20s. I was 29, 30. So my daughter. Yeah, so no, that's not true. So Jalen was, she was about 5. 20, so I was like 31.
Wow.
32. And all of a sudden I'm all, oh my God, we just bought a new house. I had the house. The money was gone from our accounts. And I'm all, what am I going to do? So now, mind you, because I hadn't lived at home since I was 13, two little girls, you know, 2 and 4.5. I was like, I have got to keep these kids in this house. Like my whole goal was keep them here, keep them safe. What am I going to do? So I just sold 69 houses my first year in real estate. And yeah, like it was just... I remember sitting in the kitchen.
So you literally just got your license because you're like, I want to do this kind of part-time, sell a couple deals or whatever.
I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom.
But within like a month, everything blows up and you basically are like, I have no other choice.
Yes. And so I remember like just feeling so bad for myself. Like it was Thanksgiving, right? So my parents are Jehovah's Witnesses. So I'm by myself. My daughters are gone with the ex. And I'm just sitting there like, drinking a bottle of wine like at 10 a.m.
Of course.
Feeling like a loser. Just more.
I'd be on my third bottle of wine.
Yeah,
at 10
I think it was 2. I'm almost embarrassed. Like, I'm like, okay, it was 2 bottles. And finally, I was like, I mean, just feeling like the worst, like not just angry, but sad. And
All of those same feelings of insecurity and those same feelings
younger.
Of not being worthy, all those things come up again when you're going through
like
a lot of the same stuff.
It's like a reiteration of, you suck.
Totally. Absolutely.
So
why do you think this is the point, right? Like this is the make it or break it point for most people. Why do you think you made it when so many other people break at this point?
Right? Oh, I
because
know why.
It could have easily been just enjoying 3 or 4 bottles of wine per day and ending up in destitute poverty, living off of the government and having all of the excuses in the world to do so, by the way. Like I'm like even if that were the story, I wouldn't look at that and be like, oh, what a you know, like waste of her potential. Be like, well, I mean, a lot of stuff kind of informed, like it makes sense that those were the decisions that ended up coming out of this, but you didn't entertain it. You didn't like move in that direction. And instead you went the complete opposite direction and sold 70 houses your first year in
69.
Real estate. 69, not quite 70.
I think I made $760,000 in commission that year. Like imagine going from
six
years as a teacher, making 60 grand after 6 years to do $760,000. It was crazy.
From nothing too.
From nothing.
But that's my point is like how did you even get in the mental space to be productive when you were going through all of that?
So it's very simple is that anytime you have a higher reason to do something, like people ask me all the time, how'd you sell 16 houses? And it's, you're for sure. I'm like, it's because of my kids. It was like, I want to keep my kids in this house. I want to keep them safe. I remember after 2 bottles of wine, looking in the backyard going, because when you buy a house in California, it's like, it's just dirt. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I'm going to build a beautiful backyard. I'm going to build a pool. Like, I literally visualized it. I'm going to build butterflies and unicorns in this backyard. So like within 10 months, had the most bitchin' backyard ever, huge water slide, like built into the pool. I mean, just amazing. And I just, you know, cried in silence and worked and smiled in front of the kids. And when they went to sleep, I worked to death. And when they were at their dad's, I worked to death and just crushed it. And I was top 1% agent every year since.
Wow. Just the deeper why.
It's why. I mean, like there's a reason. I mean, you know, if you have a big enough reason for anything, you'll do anything. That's what it was. And being smart about it, I remember being in the business, and this is what I do with everything, is looking outside of the real estate industry and thinking, okay, what are the top producers doing, right? Mm-hmm. And okay, they're on the buses. All right, I'm gonna get a loan. I'm gonna be on the buses, but I'm gonna take it one step further. I'm gonna be on Comcast commercials. I'm gonna spend, you know, $3,000 back then for a 30-second commercial to put myself on the movie theaters where it's not just a picture like this. It's like a little mini commercial. And I mean, people will still tell me now, I mean, I'll still hear, I see you at the movies. Mm. I haven't been on the movies for 10 years, but they'll still say, I see you at the movies. Like, it's happening now. So I just was, how do I make, like, good example, people would do, you know, black and white flyers on their signs if they would even do them at all. So I would do 4-page colored brochures. I'd take a CD and put it on there with like 50 pictures on the CD with my, you know, just anything I could do that was so different than everyone else. You know, had professional videography and photography like way back when before anyone was doing it. Like I made sure that anything I did, I just did it to where people would notice. And
you did all this year one?
Year one, yeah. I was very, I mean, I don't know about the professional videography. The second it came out and but I was doing professional videography. Photography and all that. And the second video came out, I was on top of it doing drone and Facebook ads came out and I learned Facebook marketing and I was like mastered Facebook advertising. So people just saw me everywhere in a different way.
Do you remember what your first like 5 or 10 deals, like how you got those first 5 or 10 deals?
Bobby Jones was my very first one. He's still my friend first and a client. Deal. Yeah. And I was at an open house and he came in and I was like, let's go right now. I like locked the door during the open house, went out and showed him houses during the, and he'll still call me. He's awesome. Yeah. Nice. I remember him. And
so like first 5 or 10 deals were kind of very
all
like traditional grassroots,
all buyers,
real estate, like open houses,
yep,
knock in the neighborhood, yep, stuff like that.
All buyers, like 69 buyers. That was when they had Thomas guides. You don't even know what that is.
Oh, all 69 of them were buyers.
First. Yeah,
oh, wow.
69. Like,
you know, I am right on the precipice of someone who still knows what a Thomas Guide
is.
So I still had to use Thomas Guides when I first got my driver's license.
Did you?
Within a couple of years, I had a smartphone and maps and all that stuff.
Well, imagine like having to show 17 houses the Thomas Guide.
Well, my dad was a real estate agent.
So
that was all of our cars were stocked with Thomas Guides.
And then you're like, oh, can we see that house? No, because I don't know. It's going to mess up my route, you know?
Like, oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So first year, you make more than you've made in your entire career combined.
Yes.
In 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
What happens year two? I'm ready to... I'm going to be in real estate for the rest of my life. There's nothing I'll ever do again. I'm going to crush this.
I loved it. I mean, I did love it. And I was great at it. Actually,
all in Northern California.
All in Northern California. And back then, I mean, the houses weren't a lot. I mean, so imagine 69 houses only making $760,000-ish.
I
get the numbers wrong. But, you know, they were like $200,000, $300,000. But they weren't a lot. And so the second year in the business, the top producing agent, her name was Tara. I won't say the last name. But she like dominated. She came to me and said, let's be partners. And so stupid me, I did. And then she moved 4 hours away while I was like running 26 deals a month by myself. And finally, after a year of doing that and wanting to kill myself, I was like, I love you, but can we separate? And she just made my life a living miserable hell.
Of course.
And I realized never partner with anybody ever again. And so like she took every listing that we had and took all the commission. I said, you know what? Who cares? Start over. And like, she's not even in the business anymore. And I just... Yeah,
that's what happens.
Yep. Sold like 100 plus homes. I averaged 134 homes a year as a solo agent.
As
a solo agent.
You had like an assistant and that was it?
I had two assistants. So I had a transaction coordinator and an assistant and myself. Yeah.
Wow.
And I went to every closing. I was relentless with, you know, I was like psycho about, like, I'm obsessed with the customer experience. So I was one of those agents. I didn't realize how much I was working until like now that I'm a coach.
Yeah.
And even though I've got multiple businesses, you know, I didn't realize how much I was working because I didn't work weekends, didn't work nights. People would come to me because I was so specialized. But I was on the phone all the time. So I was like that mom going on the zip line. Like, you know, you see those people and they're like, they're the funny jokes about realtors on parachute and they're on their computer. That was me. Like, I didn't realize I was like that, you know? Yeah, I was a psycho.
Yeah, but it ended up working out.
I don't advise it. Do not do that.
What would you have changed if you could go back?
Oh, I remember when my daughter graduated from high school, I was like crying. I'd be at a listing appointment. I'd like see the pictures of them on. I'd start crying. I realized, even though I was an amazing mom and I'm proud of myself, but I realized how much I missed. Like, I remember one time Jalen had a play and, you know, you're supposed to be your own business. And I remember going, crap, like, she's got a play right now. It was like a school play. And I run to the cafeteria and she's up there with a face the color of this, crying on stage because she didn't see me.
Oh, no.
And that wasn't me typically, but I mean, I might have been late. They might have been like the last parent pickup line a couple of times, you know. But
sure.
I just regret not being as present as I could. I was like in survival mode still, you know,
totally.
Like a lot of the insecurity about money from the foster home and not having any, and then the husband leaving it. And I was like on this desperation to make money. So for a long time, I made money out of fear.
Yeah.
It was like fear based money, and I've had to, and I will advise everyone, that's like, scared money doesn't make money, even though I did, but it's not the best way to do it. But I lived out of fear mostly of like grinding, never saying no, afraid to, you know, for so many years until finally I figured it out. And I left real estate 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Selling 154 homes that year. And I just was like, I would rather be a stripper in Vegas than, and no one would ever pay me than do sell real estate anymore. I was so tired.
And this is before like, growing big teams was a thing.
Oh yeah, never
right?
Had
like,
a team.
Like I noticed that was like not a thing that happened until like maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't know teams. It was just, I was solo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the nice thing is you get to keep all the money.
Yeah. And I was very profitable. My gosh, I mean, it was insane. I mean, like now we average $1 million a month now in my coaching business. And I think I might've made more money as a realtor because of all the expenses. Like no one tells you, you know,
well,
what
now
it costs.
You have like ops and finance and
all the
HR
employees and you know, it's like, it's been, no one says that. Like to make your first ClickFunnel, like I made $1 million. It cost me $1.2 million to make $1 million. Like they never tell you that story.
Yeah, that's because it's not true.
Like, no, they want to. Like, oh, I made $1 million. Like but it cost me $1.2 million to make $1 million.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody wants to.
Make it so
have a good story that makes them look like they're awesome, but they're really hurting.
Yeah, do you want to know what? Just ask me. I'll tell you the truth.
exactly. Okay, so then you started getting into real estate coaching. What made the jump to that like official? Like, did you do both of them at the same time for a little while because you didn't want to let go, or were you just like, I'm done?
This is a good question. So I was training my brother for like a year. So basically I knew I wanted to, actually probably 2 years. I knew I wanted to leave. So I was like, Josh, I'm going to train you to take over me.
Okay.
So I sort of like kind of, he would go on listing appointments with me. He would start doing the thing.
He's older, younger?
He's 4 years younger.
Okay.
So I brought him in. And I just showed him the ropes and taught him. And, you know, he was killing it. I mean, we were doing like 150, 160 homes a year. And I would just give him a great, you know, pay. And then one day I just got to a point where I was like, I just can't do it anymore. So I just called him and said, hey, guess what? I'm going to go coaching and I'm starting. He's like, okay, you know, you mentioned that. I'm like, I'm starting tomorrow. Like, you need to come over tomorrow. And I am giving you the whole book of business. I'm done.
Keys of the kingdom.
Yeah. Literally. I was like, bye-bye.
Yeah.
So I just like, he became the face of it. I was the face of it, but he would go on the appointments. I brought him in like on all the video content and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he then became the expert. I was like, you know, behind the scenes, but I was really building my coaching business, and which was very difficult to do. So I was taking money from my real estate business to pay for my coaching business. And I forgot how hard that was because now I'm starting a new business. Well, fast year where I'm coaching realtor, like, experts and consultants, and you realize how hard it is in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
How much it takes. And so that was kind of the journey. And so, but I do not regret it. It was the best thing I ever have done. I love coaching. You know, I'm really good at what I do. I do it so differently. And so it's fun. Like my teacher heart roots are coming back and I get to help people.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. You kind of have both. You have the teaching experience, but then you also have the experience of actually doing the thing that you're coaching on, which is more unique than you'd think it would be. But,
oh my gosh. Yeah. You have no idea. There's all these coaches like, do this to sell a house. They've never sold a house before. I'm like, how is that? How do you do that? Like, how do you become a coach? Or an expert,
it's
you've
like,
never
I'm all about
done
having confidence, but I think this is like borderline scammy.
Yeah, I know, but most of them are like that. They've
it's
never
crazy.
Sold. Yeah,
it's crazy. And that's not just in real estate. That's in like
most
every
things.
Coaching.
For those that can't do than teach.
That's exactly right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. No, you want somebody who's actually been there, done that, you know? So glad that you're doing it and glad that you're killing it. I mean, a million a month is some pretty decent results
again,
in the coaching space.
Not profit.
Yeah. But it's a real business though.
Oh, big.
Yeah, right, exactly. What was the first time that you realized like that this was going to be a wildly profitable thing for you? Like this is something that you were like, I'm going to crush this, the coaching piece.
Let's talk before that.
Okay.
Okay. So nobody really knew that, like how much I was suffering in silence, including myself. Like I didn't realize how time consuming it is to sell 150 homes a year.
By yourself.
Yeah. I didn't realize just how much like it was consuming me and how much it was taking me away from being present.
For context too, by the way, the average realtor does what? 15, 20 a year?
Oh no.
Average?
The NAR says it's 12. It's less than two. So if you take the amount of real estate agents there are based upon how many sold, it's less than two.
Got it.
NAR says 12 because it sounds better, but it's not true.
Yeah. And they might be taking a factor of like people who work it a certain amount of time, if that's possible.
Well, it's like I averaged 134 homes was my average over 17 years a year. So they're taking that average for the ones that sell one and coming
in
at 12. Yeah, that's how it works. Right. So it's like 95% of agents do 5% of the business, 5% of agents do 95%.
Pareto's principle, but skewed even more.
Yeah, way more. Yeah. So
anyway, sorry. So
it's okay.
You're burning out.
I love it.
Yeah,
but what I wanted to change, I told, I was listening to the book Think and Grow Rich. Like I actually used to run this program called Teens Lifting Lives for like 6 years where I would pay teenagers like $1,000 or $500 or $750 to read a book with me for 8 weeks. And then they would have to do these things like they had to pay it forward every day, 1 hour of no social media or no phone. They had to do like four or five things for this 8 week time frame. And once they graduated, I'd give them money. So our thing was reading this book, Think and Grow Rich. Yeah. And so I was reading it and I, for like the fifth time, because every time I would do the class, I'd read it again. And it was like, you have this calling to, people have this calling and most people never take it. Like successful people take the calling when the calling is given to them. And I was like, I've been being called to coach because I, for like 3 years, I was hearing you should be a coach. You're so inspiring. You're so motivating. And I was like, I literally was like naked, blow drying my hair in the bathroom. And I went to the computer. And I did this post. I'm going to be a coach. And I'm, and I told my mom and dad and my husband, who are like my biggest supporters and fans, I'm going to be a coach. Like, and they're like, Krista, we love you. But normal people at 47 don't leave their career making $1.8 million of GCI a year to go be a coach. Like, nobody is going to pay you. We love you, honey, but don't do it. Mm. Like, not a good idea. Like, people kill to have the kind of income that you have. And I was like, yeah, but I'm miserable. And so, they wanted to support me and help me, but they weren't. So, but I just did it anyways. And it was very difficult. I remember crying in the kitchen, like, why did I do this? Like, real estate was easier. What an idiot I am. And then finally, like, it took me 11 months to hit a million. Like, got my first two combo club award, which is where you do $1 million in sales with one funnel. And then like 3 months later, I had another million. And then 2 months later, another million. So we've done like 11 million, like $11 million funnels, different funnels.
Yeah.
And so it's like, once it hit. And then I did great for a while. And then it like a huge dip. Mm. Like all of a sudden, I realized I was spending as much as I was making almost because I was just growing too big and I wasn't being cautious.
I'll ask a question. Well, I was going to say, how much of that phase do you think is necessary?
Which phase?
This phase where you're spending almost as much as you're making because no one knows who you are and you're trying to grab branding and you're trying to grab
I think it's, for me, I like to pay for speed and pay for currency. I think organic growth is really important. And in fact, I'm really obsessed with it right now.
Yeah.
But like I could spend $200 on a local ad and I could get 500 hours of watch time. Mm-hmm. Like literally that's what you do. Like put an ad out 350 hours, 344 hours, 500 hours, 700 hours of watch time for $200 and then retarget my community. So I'm showing up all over the place so that everywhere I go, people are like, oh my God, I see you everywhere. Right. So it's not as expensive as you think at all. In fact, since no one's doing it, it's really pretty easy. It's locally. Now, that was different when I was in coaching because now I'm doing it nationally, right? No one knew who I was. Like, I literally, everyone knew me in my local community.
Yep.
Like, you do the podcasting, and I was doing something similar with Facebook ads and video. But locally, it was easy. But nationally, it was like, who is this person? So it was a lot. Like, I wrote a book, and, I created video content and ran brand awareness campaigns where I'd put money out there directed to my ideal client, avatar realtors, and I would just, without asking them to do anything, just give them value.
Content.
Just be in front of them. I would pay for attention, right? Yeah. And then I started to like, and everyone hated me because they're like, I'd say open houses suck. And, you know, don't, I was like saying everything they were taught to do. I said, do the opposite. So you had all these haters.
And you always have the haters that are doing three transactions.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You don't know what you're talking about.
You're an idiot. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, everyone hates me. And then, you know, and it's funny because it's, I've been doing this now for 6 years and it took me about 5 years to where now I'll go places and people are like, aren't you that real estate agent or aren't you that entrepreneurial coach? Because now we coach coaches, but it took me 5 years to do it because it's so much more expensive nationally. You know what I'm saying? Well, but it's you were talking about earlier. It takes time.
That was my point bringing it up because like, you know, there was a point where we were spending almost as much as we were making. And it was like, but how much profit you make? And I'm like, I know that that's technically the metric that matters, but also like sometimes you just need more attention. And sometimes it's really beneficial to get your brand in front of the right people. And like that can attract investor money and that can attract partnerships on a bigger level because more people are being made aware that you even exist.
And you can't always base success metrics on dollars, right? So like we're learning now to where it's like, okay, like I'll give you an example. Last month, we spent $70,000 on Facebook ads for our coaching business.
Okay.
We sold, I think, 71,000.
Okay.
So, and now that's just for ads. So that doesn't include my team and everything else. So, I mean, it's a loss, but those aren't the metrics. We brought in like, you know, a lot of leads. Yeah. Now these leads are going to go into my CRM and I can nurture them, right? So we're looking at, okay, how much exposure are we getting? How much attention are we getting? How many leads are we getting? That's the true metric when you first start. You can, and that's why it's hard for some people, you know, to do it. So if you want to scale at a larger level, you can invest or you can do it organically, right? Organic takes longer, but it lasts longer. Mm-hmm. So there's just different ways of doing things. But I think, you know, and some people just, it happens, which seems like overnight.
Sure.
Like people will say, oh my gosh, you've done this business overnight. I'm like, I was a real estate agent, you know, top 1% for 17 years in a row. There's nothing overnight.
What people undervalue is something called skill stacking.
Yeah.
Is that they completely undervalue that. They'll look at you as a coach and be like, oh, well, you had this overnight success. And it's like, if you had 17 years of like sales and communication experience that's irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. You can't learn that in school. You're not going to learn it getting a degree. It is only comes from the experience and the work that you put in during the time where you were a realtor. Like, just like you don't realize the little things that you say that are scripts that will make you $1 million that you just say like clockwork that you don't even think about saying anymore, but somebody new would never even think to phrase it that way.
Or even know what it is or why you're saying it.
Or the tonality that you're using, or the body language that you're using, or like just the little small things that are just, they're so second nature to you now, you don't even think about them. But those skills stacked over a period of time and then added to this new thing is what allows you to have the exponential, you know, growth in a small period of time.
Yeah.
It's not because you just have overnight success. It's because you're already really good at these like three things. Now all you got to do is add this fourth thing into the mix and then you can grow at a much higher rate than anybody else.
And even then it still takes so much time, right? It takes so much time. And I think, you know, recently I was like, oh, this is hard. And one of my team members, she's like, Krista, you know, I was just reading this quote from a billionaire. And he said, like, the biggest mistake that he sees people making is that they give, like, very successful people that were just going to, like, crush it, that they kind of like 3 feet from gold, right? But they just give up too soon. And if they just would have held on a little longer, they would have had exponential, massive growth. And that is the thing that I see. And it's crazy because when I used to go, so first of all, you mentioned this earlier when you were on my podcast. Mm-hmm. And you were like, you know, the barrier to entry in a lot of industries is very easy. Real estate, MLM, these different things, right? So because the barrier to entry is so easy, most people don't do what it takes to get to be very successful, right? Now I thought I was going to say, but it was going to be good. It was going to be good there.
Gold. Yeah, you know, yeah. You're right. You're right there. You quit too early.
Oh, you're so good for listening. Now I was thinking like, I think this might be kicking in.
Yeah, exactly.
Keto IQ. Obviously, you know, but, so, man, it was going to be good too.
Like, we'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll dig back around to it. Yeah. But yeah, it's all about building that brand then. Like, it's more the long-term stuff that you're doing. It's more like investing in the business to make it grow, even if your profit is dwindling at the expense of increased impressions. It's like, you can solve for profitability a little bit later down the road. Like right now you need people to be aware that you even exist. You know, so that's why that was the reason I asked that question.
I remember.
All right.
Okay. So I thought that because, you know, realtors can be very difficult. Like they don't want to invest. You know, I charge $24,000 for my coaching for realtors.
Yeah.
I've been paid up to $200,000 for teaching coaches and experts, right? Mm-hmm. But so I've got a lot of, over the past 3.5 years, we've been doing these events.
Yeah.
And we've learned this model. I mean, we've done this like 48 times now. And every single time we do an event, we tweak, we modify, we adjust. So I've been speaking on these stages, talking about this model. And so I've had a lot of people come to me and say, will you teach this to me? Mm. So I assumed that entrepreneurs were going to be better than real estate agents in the fact that they would realize that they need things take time. They have to invest. They have to like give it the time it takes for it to work. They have to work, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought that real estate agents, because of the barrier to entry is so easy, we're harder to work with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not true.
Really?
Oh my gosh. Like I think even some, almost even sometimes entrepreneurs are even harder. It's because they think they know everything. And it's like, so it's like for them to like kind of learn a new way. So I was just like, man, people don't understand. Like you have to work at things. Like if you want to, nothing comes overnight. You have to put effort in and time. I mean, things take
and money.
Time and money.
Yeah.
It's like, and if you don't have the money, it's going to take way more time. So find the money. It's
exactly.
Like figure out the money because you can't get the time back and you're actually wasting more money by spending the time than just investing the time.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just been crazy.
Yeah, it's going to take some resource.
Yes.
Probably yeah. Both time and money.
For
if you
sure.
Have more money, then you can use money to pay people like you so that you don't have to take 3 years to figure
even
out
then,
this thing.
Still takes a ton of time and energy.
But yeah, and then even yeah. After you pay for that. And like the thing that people I think are disillusioned by is the fact that they join one program and it takes them a lot because it's like, man, I've never spent $5,000 on something before that's like coaching program. And like you're talking about a $24,000 coaching program. I'm saying like for somebody that's totally new, they're like, man, $5,000, it's a big hurdle. And as soon as they let go of that $5,000, their only intention is getting it back. And they forget about the fact that they're building a business long-term and that $5,000 is a drop in the bucket compared to the idea that they have of how much money they want to make. It's like, that's the discrepancy. Like to me, it's like, you can't have these massive goals and then hold your money like this.
Oh no.
You know what I'm saying? I'll ask people about, you know, when I was selling podcast coaching or trainings and courses and stuff like that, you know, I'd ask people that, like, how much money do you intend on making with this show? And they're like, oh, you know, $100,000 a year. It's like, okay, well, this course, you know, it's out on a webinar, you know, this course is $1,000. And people balk at the $1,000 course price. And it's like, you want to make $100,000 a year on this podcast? You know zero things about podcasting.
And you won't pay.
And you don't think that $1,000 course from somebody who's been there, done that is going to help you be able to get to the point where your podcast is churning out $10,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, like this is not a small, like, what do you,
it's
how
nothing.
Do you think you're going to get, like, how, it's, then it's just going to take you 3 or 4 years to figure out everything that I figured out
and
in 3 or 4 years.
Way more
like,
than that.
Yeah. And then the broader point behind that is that you're probably not going to make it work because you're not going to last 3 or 4 years.
Exactly. You're not going to last,
I mean?
3 or 4 months.
Right. Because you're going to get so, you know, frustrated with the process that I'm going to help you through for $1,000. It's not like, you know what I mean? Like, but people, when they have $300 in their bank account, it's like, man, $1,000 is a lot of money. It's like, I agree that in your perspective, $1,000 is a lot of money. But when you have that's not the problem to me. The problem to me is that you have these crazy goals, but you still think $1,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And like, you have to think at the level of the person that you want to become, not the level of the person that you are, if you're going to get to that next level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to allow yourself to think about money in that malleable, flexible way where it's like, man, that's a lot of money.
And
for
it's
me.
Replenishable. You know, I just learned.
It is replenishable.
So
exactly.
I'm writing a check. I just got approved for this new mastermind and it's $250,000 investment.
Mm, yeah.
Okay. Now, right now is not the optimal time for me to be investing $250,000 because I haven't been as profitable. It's been a rougher 15 months,
mm-hmm.
Right? But, and on top of that, like I just did a $70,000 investment to write, you know, two new books, like these mm-hmm. things, and people are like, oh my God, my team's like, oh, and I'm like, listen, this is not, I'm not spending this money. I'm investing this in my own.
Yes.
This is an investment. Like, and I've always had that mentality to where, and it'd be so cool to do a podcast or something with like 10 very successful people to see like how much money they've actually spent. And even like, you're very smart, Travis, very smart. And you're still
Thank
investing.
You.
Like, it's the best money that you will ever spend because you're taking the time, the energy, the money, the resources, the knowledge from somebody else that what they did wrong, what they didn't, and not doing it. I mean, there's not a better investment. People will spend so much money to go to college,
right?
You know, And you know, to be a doctor, to be a financial advisor, to do these things, to make such little money.
Yes.
Such little money.
And have little impact.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars a day and work for somebody else. And like the amount of profits that doctors, and I have friends, doctors and dentists make, it is so sad. And if you would just invest in learning a skill set that somebody's done something well,
yeah,
it is the best investment I've ever made. So for me, it's like, okay, this is not fun to write this check. It, you know, it's a little scary.
Yeah.
It's like it's 4 times more than I made as a teacher.
Yeah, right.
Working 12 months in a row, making, you know, after 6 years. But I know, like, my mindset is like, it'll pay off. It'll pay off. And yes, even when I'm having rough times, I'm always like, this isn't payoff. I'm doing the right thing. Even if I'm not seeing the results, I'm like, I don't ever say it's not working. It's like, right, it's like my mindset is it's working. I'm doing it. Like, I'm building the foundation. I'm doing the thing. It's a complete mindset shift constantly. I think you have to have that when you're in business.
This episode of the show is brought to you by Indeed. We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is not to search at all. It's to match, and match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need this platform, guys. I'm telling you, Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging candidates so you can connect with those people even faster. And it doesn't just help you hire faster. In fact, 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And look, guys, one of the things that I wish I would have used Indeed for is this matching service. You can search and search and search and search and search all day long, but to actually be presented with quality candidates, like hiring a recruiter for you that's presenting people that has actually done the work to vet them and bring quality people in front of you, that work by itself is the fact that it's done by a software instead of like a team of high quality recruiters is pretty insane. So they leverage over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, which is why Indeed's matching engine is the best one that you can use. It's constantly learning from your own preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets at doing the job for you. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility over at Indeed.com/Travis. Just go to Indeed.com/Travis right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed here on the podcast. Indeed.com/Travis. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
I've never made an investment in those things that has not worked out to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, I think it's about having the right mindset going into it. Second of all, it's about how much you work the program or the mastermind or the thing that the coaching, whatever. Like, if you have a coach, like, they don't do the work for you. That's the dumb thing, is people think coaching is like, I paid for this, therefore I must get result. And it's like, no, you paid for it. Now you have to work, and then you get the result. Like, it's not, I'm not going to do the work for you, man. Like, I'm here to tell you what to do. You go do it. Then, like, that's how it works. You know what I mean? Like, like, Phil Jackson isn't playing. He's telling Michael Jordan, this is the play. And then Michael Jordan goes out, Kobe goes out, Shaq goes out. Like, he's the coach that you don't, he's not the player. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Like, you're the one in the game. Go get in the game. Just do the things I'm asking you to do, because I've been in that game and I know that they're going to work if you go do them.
Yeah.
And so there's been several programs that I thought didn't work, meaning that, like, the promise that was promised to get me to go in was, like, not fulfilled. And at first I had this, like, really negative attitude about it, where I was just like, man, you know, screw this industry, people suck and whatever. But then whenever I looked at it from a longer term point of view, I would notice that, like, oh, you know what? I thought that thing was a waste of money. That $20,000 thing I bought, you know, 4 years ago was a waste of money. But, like, somebody just hit me up on an email last week. And this is like 3 years, you know, difference between the time that I was in this program and the time that this person hit me up. Somebody that I met in that group that we became good friends, who was launching a podcast and paid me like $25,000 to launch their podcast.
Just the relationships just alone.
Like, oh, yeah. I guess, like, everything I've ever done is really, like, and I've invested, I don't know, close to $500,000 now. You know,
Well,
there was one mastermind I was in, it was $100,000 a year. I did it for a couple of years. And every time I've put money out, not only has it directly come back to me directly from like people in the group,
yes,
or business that I've done with those people or referrals that they've made to me, but again, the relationships and the knowledge that you gain in that time period collapses the time that it takes that would take for you to normally get that information if you're just going to do it on your own.
Absolutely.
And then you fast forward again enough time and you have 20 years of building relationships with the type of people who are also willing to invest in themselves at that level. Those are great people to have in your circles. Like the types of people that are willing to go say like, not like, I want to learn, and to prove how much I want to learn, I'm going to put $100,000 in this group, or I'm going to put $250,000 into this one group. Like those types of people are people that are constantly growing, constantly learning, mm-hmm, constantly evolving. And a lot of times really solid people to be around and really solid people to have in like your network of professional, yes, friends.
Especially when you're like, you're wanting to go to a different level, right? I mean,
totally.
I don't know about you, but like, you know, a lot of my friends are teachers and they're police officers, and to, mm-hmm, talk to them about the things that, like, you know, we go to parties, we don't talk about strip clubs. We talk about like what's your funnel doing? Like, yeah, what's, right, your marketing? How are you doing this? Right. But they're amazing, and they're,
sure,
but there's a different mentality, that they can't even understand. Like, they're making $100,000 a year when you can make $100,000 in a month. So it's hard to talk to them about it. But when you're, like, I love being and I'm going to be in this mastermind, I'm in, like, the smallest person in the room. Like, yeah, I'm going to be like, I mean, I'm in this room with like, oh my gosh, how'd they even accept me? You know, I think I got the girl token card. I'm not sure, but I think so. But you know what I mean? Like, I want to be that person because I want to learn from them. And when I see other people doing so well, I say, if they can do it, I can do it. Like, my mind, totally, goes, if they can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to adapt.
There's nothing
that
special.
Yeah. But people think there are. They're like, I'm always like, I'm just a girl with the bit till she was 11 and couldn't read and has been in a foster home. Like, if I can do it, you can do anything. I mean,
yeah,
that's how you have to look at things. But people's minds, like, there's the unicorn effect. They see, you know, Travis, and like, oh my gosh, Travis is because he's got these big muscles and he's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's, you know,
works
out.
They weren't always there.
Yeah. You know, and that's why he's successful. It's like, no, he worked his butt off and did the, yep, thing, and he took risks and he, you know, failed and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And every time you get like, if you ask yourself this question, you don't know the answer to it, then it's probably about time you should do it. And the question is, when was the last time I was the dumbest person in the room? If you don't have an answer to that question, then I think you're doing things the wrong way.
Yeah.
Because like, I am always the dumbest person. Like, it seems like, to me, in my opinion, you know, it's like, I get into these rooms and I'm just like, man, I'm, you know.
And it can be intimidating.
I was in this mastermind.
I want to know the 100K one too, which what you were.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So I was in one of these mastermind breakout sessions, this 100K mastermind, and I was feeling pretty good because I just clocked in like my first ever like $250,000 month, and I was like, you know, like feeling like pretty good about myself.
Yeah.
We go around the table, we're like all telling about our, you know, struggles in the business. This guy next to me is like, yeah, we're stuck right around 40 million right now, and we're trying to get to 50, and you know, these funnels are giving us an issue. And I was just like, okay. Well, my problems seem really, really small at this point. All right. Next person comes up. They go, yeah, we're trying to sell our company for over $1 billion. We're right around 180 million this year, and we're trying to get to about 220. And there's these like things that keep popping up, and we keep running these issues with compliance, and this big competitor of ours was stealing data. And I was just like, all right, well, why am I here? Like, I don't understand why I'm here. You know what I mean? But like, you get in rooms like that with again, normal seeming everyday people,
mm-hmm,
that have built something amazing because they took the time to work through the issues that they had and kept leveling up over a long period of time. When you get in rooms like that, like, I was feeling pretty good about myself. And objectively, it was pretty good numbers that we were hitting in the business, you know? But when you get into rooms where people are doing that type of stuff, it just makes you realize like, man, if I want to get to that level, it is possible.
Yes.
And I now know people who have gotten to that level who, like, you know, later that night, we're all hanging out at a party and just like chilling, get to know each other. And they want to know what I've done, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they find what I've done interesting. It's like, to me, it's like, I feel like I'm nothing here, but they want to know how I, whatever, had Shaq on my show, or they want to know how, yeah, I got in touch with these people over here. And like, they want to know the things that I have to tell them, but I want to know more about what they are doing because they have other skills that I don't have. It's like this, you know, our iron sharpening iron thing, to steal something from what the Bible says about it, that happens when you get into those types of rooms, you know, and those people will always turn you into a better version of yourself.
Yes.
Especially the more you continue to invest in rooms like that.
I'm attracted to ones too, that it isn't just about money. It's like, they want to have, they're into health and they want to be the best parent. They want to be the best spouse. Like they're yes. like, that's the kind of masterminds that I tend to gravitate towards. A lot of it's from my upbringing. I think probably you too.
Where, sure.
You know, it's, I want to be just the best version of everything. And so when you're around other people that feel the same way, it's nice.
Well, when I was fat, I was that way. I was like, when I first started gaining a lot of weight, I would go, because like where I'm from, there's not a lot of wealthy people, you know? So I would go back and this is when I was just doing door-to-door sales, but I was making six figures.
Yeah.
I was like 23, you
That's
know,
great.
Knocking doors.
Yeah.
And, but I was starting to gain a lot of weight and I went back to where I grew up and like had this guy who's he was actually on one of the basketball teams I used to coach. And he was like in college now at that point when I was gone. And he's like, he said something about like how much weight I'd gained or something. Like says like you're looking pretty like big. Or, I think he was really blunt about it and just said, like looking kind of fat there, Travis, or something like that. And like my response was just because I was obviously insecure about that at that time, and frankly didn't realize how much weight I'd been gaining.
Yes, you don't realize
it.
No, huh?
It just packs on so fast. Mm-hmm. And so I said something like, "Yeah, so is my wallet," or something like that. And it was like at that time where like as soon as I said the words, I was like, I felt good about the comeback, but also it made me go like, I don't want to be that guy though.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the guy that's just like, oh yeah, he's got a lot of money, but have you seen him lately? Like, oh my gosh, like look how much.
Well, and then everything's worse. Like, and you know, like you have to use that to like,
totally.
Like to make you feel good. And sometimes, right. Sometimes I've noticed myself doing that. I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to be that person. Like, you're in these rooms and you feel, you know, and it's weird. Even as a woman, sometimes I feel like that, even though it's like, now I'm like, my new power is that I'm a woman. Like, I'm changing my mindset. Yeah.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I thought that it was just, you know, you want to nail down every aspect of your life and you should constantly be trying to improve them.
Yes.
And
always.
At least to the degree that you would like to do it. You know, I think if you adopt other people's goals, then you can just be on this like treadmill of insecurity because all you care about is what other people think about you, not what you think about yourself. So for me, getting back in shape was not really a factor of like other people thinking of what other people thought about me. It was more just like, I want to be that for me.
Yeah.
Like, I want my kids to see their dad and be like, yeah, he's in shape. Yes. He makes good money. Like
takes care of
himself. Yeah. And ultimately, you know, you get down to it. Our health is really all that we have. You know, there's any rich person in the world, if they're unhealthy, they'd trade every single dollar they have just to be healthy again.
Exactly. You don't have a problem if money can pay for it, right?
Yeah.
You do when you can't.
Well, Krista, this has been awesome. Thanks so much for coming on. This is a show all about relationships. You have been in positions where you were extremely lonely. And now you are in positions where you have a lot of really great relationships. And it sounds like you've had some lifelong friends along the way with your friend that you said that you've had since you were seven. And now she's like kind of second command at your company, which is really cool. Talk to me about the impact that high quality relationships has had on your life.
Oh, just huge. You know, I mean, I love people. So I'm a people person. My slogan's always been people before things and the things will come. That was my slogan as a real estate agent. And, you know, it's just like, there's nothing more. I mean, like you talked, everything is a relationship business. I mean, even in this entrepreneurial world that we're in, it's like, it's so relationship based. And it's like, you can just collapse so many timeframes by, like, I remember when I had a decision to do this launch and I was really afraid to do it because I was in a position where I didn't have the means that I thought to actually really do well in it, right?
Mm-hmm. Is this the event you're talking about?
I did the Tony Robbins and Dean Graziosi's top 10.
Their affiliate.
Yeah, for their affiliate, match. Yeah. And I remember calling my mentor and saying, should I do this? And he says, Krista, I would pay $1 million just to be in the room with Tony Robbins. And I was like, oh, really? And it's like, okay, so I did it. And I ended up, you know, getting second place and then third place this past year.
Nice.
And it took my mentor 10 years to get that relationship with Tony. Like, he did the whole Dream 100 and like sent him this Batman costume to his house, like did everything he could to get attention. Took him 10 years. It took me 8 months after that relationship from doing their launch, adding value, helping them. And it was because of the relationship I had with my mentor, right? And just being able to be in positions that I never would have been in. And just like you just learn things from people through relationships that they normally wouldn't tell or talk about. And so it's just, there's nothing like it. Like you said, like you just, you know, yeah. I mean, like I love people. I want to help people and be around them. And there's nothing more important than that. There's nothing more important than relationships, I believe.
So this will probably be a pretty easy question for you to answer then. Do you believe that who you know or what you know is more important?
Which one? You remember the book Who Not How from Dan Kennedy and Dr.
Yes.
Benjamin Hardy?
Yeah, Ben
Hardy. Read the book, Who Not How. I mean, it's so true. It's like in every aspect. I mean, the who's are everything. They can just from the who they know and the introductions they can make, and it's just so many different reasons why. And especially when you get into these places where you're around, like we were talking, we're like the smallest people in the room, right?
Yeah.
That you learn things that you would never have known to do or not to do that can just absolutely take years off of what you're trying to do. Just, and like you had said, you've done so many programs, me too. And there's times where I'm like, damn, this was not even worth, you know, $440,000, or this was not worth whatever it was. But then I always try to take one thing.
Yeah.
And just, if I can get one thing and focus on that one thing, it's worth it. And more often than not, it's the people.
Yeah. Right. Totally.
Yeah.
And every time I did one of those two, for me, it was like every dollar I've ever invested into myself is another dollar that I bet on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like there is something powerful about that. And I don't think that it should be the only reason you go invest in stuff, or you're just going to waste money on programs and never do anything.
Yeah.
And there are people that are like that, by the way. There's people who just like spend money on programs thinking that that's the answer to their problems, and it's not, it's the work that they're avoiding. So you can kind of be a information junkie, I think, and never actually
do the
anything.
Thing.
Yeah, totally. But assuming you're that type of person, I don't think that you can waste money doing it. Cause like I said, every time I put a dollar into me has been another dollar that has made me believe in myself a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because like, again, some of the Bible got right is where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. And if you're constantly investing into yourself and in your own growth and your own development, then you're going to care a lot more about it.
You know
what I mean? Like money has this really powerful way of becoming your number one accountability partner.
Yes.
You know, regardless of if, again, that program worked for you or these steps ended up working out or they did what they said they were going to do, just like, at the end of the day, man, every dollar I've ever invested in myself, I've gotten back out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only sure investment that you can make.
Warren Buffett says,
can't be stingy about it.
Best investment you can make is an investment in your own earning power and your own education, especially during times of recession. That is straight from Warren Buffett.
Yep.
Because they can't take it away from you.
Right. The master investor himself, you know, and especially if you, like, people, you know, will ask, like, well, I have saved up $20,000. What should I do with it? And it's like, put it in you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, I agree.
There's not a better investment. And if you only have 15, 20 grand to put in something, you know, like it's not going to do as much for you as you investing in yourself is going to do for you.
Take a loan. There's even a Bible story where it was Elijah, and he's like, this woman came to him and said, I don't have any money. Elijah, how are you going to help me? And he said, how are you going to help yourself? Like, you got to help yourself. He's like, go and find out what you've got. Like, what do you have in your hands? And she's like, I have this one thing. And he's like, okay, go ask your neighbors for more.
Mm.
And then he's like, okay, now go sell it. Go sell it. Sell what they've given you. Then go pay people back and then take the profits. Like, so she, and you know, you've got to invest in yourself. Like even, you know, no one's going to do it for you. You got to invest in yourself and take that. Like, even if you have to, that's one thing I don't believe if with that. What's that guy that tells you to save everything?
Ramsey.
I don't believe in Ramsey. He's like, don't ever have any debt. Like, I believe that in a lot of ways, but not when it comes to investing your business and your earning power, your education, your knowledge. Like,
totally.
Invest. I mean, that's the quickest way for you to take that investment and triple it, quadruple it, 100x it.
Yeah. I'm always careful when I tell people about that. Cause I debt in general is bad because most people don't use debt well.
Yes.
And like they screw themselves because they get, you know, they think a credit card is just fun money and it's not real and they can just go buy a new TV and they can get a new sound system and they've been meaning to upgrade their stereos and their car or whatever. And it's like, well, yeah, if you use debt for those things, it's objectively terrible. Those are bad ideas.
Yes.
But every time I've started a business, when I started my software company, when I started my podcast, when I started anything that I've started that's new, I've always taken out 0% credit cards that give me 0% interest for 12 months. And I put the entire balance of starting, like everything that I need for that business, I put on credit cards. It gives me 12 months to pay it off interest-free. I've never made an interest payment. All of them have all been paid off every time.
Good.
And it gives me credit card points that I can use to go travel to like industry events and go meet people that can help me make more money during that time period. You know what I mean? Like I've done very well, like leveraging debt.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that debt is always bad is just, it's silly. And while I agree that probably more people should take that path, like if you have any desire to have outsized success in life, you are probably going to need to use debt to be able to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I agree.
If you are just trying to like be middle class and you don't really care about any of that, and you just want to make, and you're in like deeply in debt right now, and you got to claw your way out, and you had bad experiences, then like, I think a lot of what he teaches is really good advice for some of those people, just to start building the discipline of not spending more than you make.
Yes. Like, if not you can, when it comes to your education.
Yes, correct.
Power, your business. Yeah.
With that one, that's why I tell people on my show all the time, like whenever I have an author on, I tell people like, buy the book now. Buy the book. Don't wait. Buy the book right now. The only thing that should be an unlimited budget in your expenses every month is like books. Just like, buy the books, listen to the books, read the books.
There's do the books.
Years and years and years and years and years of knowledge and experience wrapped up in 250 pages from somebody who's been there, done that, and you can buy it for $23. Like, come on, unlimited budget when it comes to books and audiobooks. But anyway, it sounds like we agree on a lot of that stuff. Who you know, what you know is a question I've asked probably 700 people on the show. So
they all probably say the same thing. Who you know?
You know what? You'd be surprised.
Really?
That's actually the book that I'm thinking about writing right now is a book about like who you know versus what you know,
yeah,
and why I think it's who you know. But there's been a lot of different answers I've gotten for that question over the years. You'd think it'll either be who you know or what you know, but everybody comes up with their different little things to say.
Both.
What you know is obviously important.
It's
you got to be competent and you have to do the work and you have to build skills. But yeah, to me, it's like, if you focus more on the who, the what will come with the who that you know. Whereas if you focus more on the who will not necessarily come unless you already have outside success doing that thing. So like Zuckerberg is a what you know guy, obviously.
Yes.
He built Facebook. Now he can meet anybody in the world that he wants to meet ever. So his who you know is definitely fed by his what you know. But the what you know was so objectively, exponentially greater than anything. Like most people don't have control over that. Over how well their idea is accepted by the marketplace. And so if you wait to go meet people until you're successful and you're 55 and it's like, well, you probably missed out on a lot of great connections and opportunities in the meantime because you were waiting for people to come to you because you were so good at what you did. Whereas if you did the opposite and you go meet people who are already really good at what they do and that's what you want to be good at, then like your who, your what will increase exponentially based on the who that you bring into your life. And I don't find that the opposite is true. So my opinion is that it's still the who thing.
Yeah.
So, but it's like we talked about on your podcast, relationships are what brings the most happiness and fulfillment in life.
Yes.
And when it comes to deathbed regrets, when it comes to actually sheer data on like the happiness study that Harvard did over like a 90-year time frame, there's so many other reasons why like filling your life with high quality people is going to do better for you long term. So
I agree.
Krista, thanks so much for coming to the show. I know that you do an event every single month. Tell me a little bit about that and how people can find that.
Yeah, so you can just find me on any socials, Krista Mayshore. And then if you go to theprovenmodel.com/Travis, theprovenmodel.com/Travis, you can find out about how we help entrepreneurs, coaches and experts like scale high ticket offers.
The Proven Model.
Yep, theprovenmodel.com/Travis. Yep.
And then at Krista Mayshore on all platforms.
At Krista Mayshore.
Cool. And that's MASHORE.
You got
Krista Mayshore on all the platforms. Go tell her what's up. Tell her you heard about her here on the show. Krista, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. You're awesome.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet. Then leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.